This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
26 games, the 1-2. And this ball driven to right. Castellanos was in. He's going back. So's the ball off the wall. The red hot start for the kid continues. A double to give the Cubs a 1-0 lead.
Courtesy of ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, PCA getting it done on the national stage. Rami Makhlouf with you until 9 o'clock here on the Score Evening Show. Coming up, your chance to win some prizes here on the Score. But joining me now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. She covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. Pleasure to welcome in Megan Montemiro. Megan, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How fun is PCA to watch? Let's just start right there.
Yeah, I mean, he's an exciting player. I mean, obviously, when you see what he can do both defensively and offensively, I mean, when you have an all-around player with that level who's young, who still has potential and, you know, continues to seem to constantly get better, he's certainly entertaining and one of those kind of players where you look forward to seeing what he can do in any given game.
He got off to a little bit of a rough start early in the season, and correct me if I'm wrong, Megan, but the uptick in his production seems to coincide with he and the Cubs sort of shutting down any contract extension talks that they were having earlier in the year. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, maybe it overlaps. I think that's more coincidental. I think really the key for him has been, and he talked about it, just like understanding, you know, you're going to go through some of these stretches, and that, you know, both when things are going good or bad, you can't be riding the highs or lows too much. And so I think you're just seeing him, you know, knowing that even if there are days where he might be putting up an offer in the batter's box, that, you know, he can still impact the game in the outfield. And he's shown, too, when he gets on base through walks, that he's still a threat, obviously, with stealing bases. And so, you know, he talked about for him that, you know, if the team's winning, you know, that's really all he cares about. And so I think that mindset is helpful when you do go through those stretches. And he learned last year of kind of what it takes to find that routine that helps that consistency. And so I think, you know, you're just kind of seeing a young player understand how to get through those moments.
And they are winning. Talking with Megan Montemiro of the Chicago Tribune here on the Scores Evening Show. Sitting at 17-12 now. They were 17-11 to start the year last year. Basically the same record that they had last year. What would you say is the major difference just in terms of the character of this ball club and watching the way that they play?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is the quality of competition they've played. I mean, when you look at what their record is and who they've played, I mean, they've played 500. They've played 29 games against teams above 500, which is pretty insane to do before April's even over. I think I did a quick glance through the standings. I think only about three other teams have even gotten to 20 games against teams over 500, and to do that and be 17-12, I think says a lot about the group's potential. And for a team who has been clear since the offseason that, you know, postseason is the goal, that is the expectation, anything less would be a disappointment. You know, they have to be pleased with the start. When you look at what the offense has done collectively, top to bottom, it shows the potential, especially against the quality of pitching that they faced. And so far, you know, pitching's held up through, you know, some ineffective performances earlier this month by the bullpen, obviously losing Justin Steele for the season. So there's obviously still challenges ahead. And, you know, obviously they had a great April last year and then it all fell apart after that. So, you know, 1 month isn't going to make the season, but I think there's a lot of encouraging signs to, you know, give, if you're a Cubs fan, belief that this team could be playing in October.
Yeah, and I reeled off some of these stats earlier, Megan. Going into yesterday's series finale, first in runs, RBIs, total bases, stolen bases, on-base percentage, hits, and triples, second in batting average, slugging, and OPS. How much of that can you chalk up to the Kyle Tucker effect?
I mean, I definitely think that's a real thing. I mean, you know, when you look at their top 3 to 4 hitters, I mean, that's a pretty balanced group, not only when you look at handedness, but, you know, their ability to, you know, control the strike zone, get on base, slug. And, you know, when you talk to other hitters about what it's been like, just even watching Kyle Tucker and in the day-to-day work he does, that resonates. And you see a guy who has his routine. You know, he's a guy that doesn't usually hit much on the field before games. He's usually a guy that gets his work done in the cage. He knows himself and what he needs to get ready. And I think the thing that stands out watching him on a day-to-day basis is just his understanding of the strike zone. I mean, you know, when he hit that big homer in the eighth for when they had their comeback during this homestand, I mean, he had two ugly-looking swings early in the at-bat, and, you know, he's able to lock it in when he gets his pitch. And so I think those are the kinds of things that can rub off on other hitters watching his approach and just understanding himself as a hitter and what he does well. And he talked about in spring about how, you know, as he's matured over his career, understanding like there are pitches he could go swing at, but he knows that, you know, it might not be the best pitch for the damage he wants to do. So I think it definitely has an impact, but I also think too, you look top to bottom, what like the bottom half to bottom third of the lineup has done when you look at the production from their catchers, when you look at PCA. I mean, I think that makes a big difference too, that it's not all coming from one area of the lineup.
And it's not all the long ball either. It's a lot of this is the stolen bases and the base running that the Cubs have been doing this offseason. And that was a major emphasis of Craig Counsell and new third base coach Quentin Berry. This is very much the style of baseball that they want to play, in getting every 90 feet that they can possibly get every time that the ball goes into play.
Yeah, and I mean, it was instilled obviously in spring training. I mean, there were many days where watching on field one at the complex, you know, Quentin Berry was instructing the group, you know, on base running drills. And, you know, it's a mindset that, you know, again, players have talked about, that, you know, you always have to have that mentality. You've seen it even when they're trying to beat out, you know, force plays at second base, which they've done a couple times, especially Pete, that extended the inning and led to runs. And so, you know, it's a top to bottom thing. Like, everyone has to have that mentality, and I think you're seeing it. And, you know, those are the little moments that add up over the course of a game and a season that sometimes get overlooked, but you never know when those moments are going to have a big impact on the outcome. And I think you're seeing how that's manifested so far.
I think one of the intangibles of this baseball team, we can talk about the fielding, the base running, the home runs and all that, but one of the intangibles about this baseball team, very, very resilient, Megan. I mean, we're only a month in and I can't even remember or count the comebacks or games I thought that they were out of and fought their way back into it, if not won. That has been remarkable from this baseball team this year, or just bouncing back from a tough loss the previous day. This has been a really, really resilient baseball club.
Yeah, and it's something that Craig Counsell has talked about, you know, after their most recent one. And, you know, he was saying how these are the kinds of things that you carry forward in a season in terms of, you know, you're capable of coming back from difficult moments in a game. And that, and I think also what is perhaps as impressive is, you know, it's not like they're falling behind 8-0 in, you know, the second inning and they have 6 to 7 innings to rally from it. I mean, some of these comebacks are happening with 1 or 2 innings left in the game. And so, yeah, I think that is something, is a quality that can't be overlooked. Now, you know, as Counsell has also said, like, it might not mean anything if they don't take care of business the rest of the season. But I do think those are qualities that are indicators of a potentially special team. And, you know, if you get to the postseason, there are going to be those moments where you're going to have to rally and you're going to have to recover from a tough moment. And so even if it's April, especially the way they've done it against good teams, you know, against the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers, you know, I think those things matter. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that trend plays out over the next couple months.
Talking with Megan Montemurro, covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune here on the Score Evening Show with yours truly, Rami Makhlouf. Now it hasn't all been good, Megan. There have been some bumps in the road, and the thing that sort of cost this team last year after the hot start was that bullpen. And here we sit at the end of April, and despite a 17-12 record, that bullpen, the 28th ERA in Major League Baseball right now, last I checked. What are the Cubs saying about that, and if and how they can fix that and get that turned around?
Yeah, I mean, bullpens are the notorious volatile group that are always really kind of tough to predict sometimes. And I think, you know, the big thing is, you know, you're starting to see how Council has kind of found his back end group. It's been a mix of obviously Merriweather, Porter Hodge, Ryan Pressly. Obviously, you know, those guys aren't always going to be perfect, but it's a group collectively that, you know, they believe in. And part of that now then it also is who are the guys that are going to help bridge to those moments. You know, you're not always going to be able to get your starter through six or seven innings. So who are going to become the trustworthy relievers when you're trying to maintain a lead to get it to those back end guys? And, you know, there's been some encouraging stuff from a guy like Daniel Palencia, obviously with his velocity. You know, if he can really find some consistency with his command, that makes him an intriguing guy. You know, you have Tyson Miller, you know, potentially in the mix soon as he comes back. So, you know, for now, it's one of those things where it's like, that's why you build depth in the off season. You're looking at your internal options. You know, you're making waiver wire claims, you're promoting guys from AAA and giving them a run to see what they might have. So really it's kind of in that mixing and matching phase and seeing who earns the trust, from the coaching staff in some of those moments, especially on days when, you know, you might be down one or two of your high leverage guys. You know, who are you going to turn to in those other moments? So yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of a trial and error point right now, and they've shown some signs of willing to be aggressive. And, you know, if a guy's not getting it done, you know, they're getting optioned and they're bringing somebody else up. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what flow the bullpen potentially gets in over the next month.
One of the other areas where you'd like to see improvement, or one of the other guys you'd like to see improvement from, is at shortstop with Dansby Swanson batting 181 right now, 577 OPS. It doesn't seem to be affecting his mindset when he goes out to play defense. Still one of the more reliable gloves out there at the shortstop position. Do you notice any change in his demeanor, or whether this slow start is wearing on him in any way, or is he as steady as they come as far as major league players go?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty steady. I mean, he's obviously a veteran. He's gone through, you know, stretches like this before. And I mean, I think for him, it's, you know, if the bat isn't producing like he wants, the defense, you know, is pretty consistently there. And, you know, now that he's fully healthy after off-season surgery, you know, you're seeing him defensively be, again, one of the best shortstops in the league. But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for as well as the offense has looked, he's really been the one guy outside of maybe a series or two stretch, just really has not looked locked in at any point. And, you know, the expectation obviously is a veteran with him that he will get to that point, but, you know, you can kind of tell that he's just kind of a little bit in guessing mode at the plate. And so, you know, no hitter wants to be in that position. Obviously you always want to be in the attack mode and feel like you have the advantage over the pitcher. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, he gets bumped down the order at all. If Craig, you know, Council tries to switch some things up, maybe bump up Pete Kerr-Armstrong, you know, move Dansby down a little bit in the lineup. But yeah, I mean, at some point they'll need him to get going, because, you know, you figure other guys in the lineup, will go through many slumps at some point too. So obviously, you know, he's shown defensively that, you know, he's not carrying his offensive struggles with him in the field, and that defense is consistent no matter what.
The major blow and what's otherwise been a very good month of April was Justin Steele going down with the season-ending elbow surgery. Megan, how soon is too soon for me to be looking at the trade market and what the Cubs might be able to acquire or add to that starting rotation to fill the void left by Justin Steele?
Yeah, I mean, if they're looking to, you know, replace Justin Steele with somebody of his caliber, which, I mean, since 2022, when he went into the rotation full time, I mean, he's been probably top 15 in baseball in terms of consistency, you know, when you look at his ERA and what he's produced. So to get that kind of pitcher, you know, it's probably not coming until late June or July, you know, once you're getting into trade deadline territory. Just, you know, for the most part, teams aren't giving up that caliber of starting pitcher this early in the season. And so, again, it's something Jed Hoyer's talked about multiple times since the Justin Steele news came out, you know, that this is why, again, you address pitching depth in particular and starting pitching options in the off season. And, you know, right now, obviously, Colin Ray has been pitching very well. He's going to be pitching the finale on Thursday against, looks like, Paul Skeens. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he keeps that rolling and, you know, what options, you know, they consider as the summer goes on. Obviously, they have Jordan Wicks at AAA, who's a starter option, you know, obviously top pitching prospect. Cade Horton, you know, with how well he's been pitching at AAA, figures to be an option at some point this year as well. So, yeah, but like external options, it's probably going to be a while before, you know, they get someone of high level to add to the rotation if that's ultimately what they choose to do.
That's Megan Montemurro covering the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. You can follow her on Twitter at @M_Montemurro for the latest on the Cubs, and my guest for the last few minutes on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. Megan, really appreciate the time and the insight. Hope we talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
And like I said, she joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Hey, keep listening for your chance to win your way in to see Mully and Haw do their show live on Friday, May 16th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be part of a studio audience as they get you set for the start of the Crosstown Series with special guests and plenty of Cubs Sox chatter. Plus, popcorn will be provided by Nuts on Clark. That's Friday, May 16th, and it's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. We have some breaking news from the NBA. We'll get your way. Also, we're talking Cubs right now, and things are really, really good with the Cubs right now, but I was reading about something that went down with the Cubs a few years ago that's really sticking in my craw. We'll talk about that right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
All right. In the words of Marshawn Lynch, I'm tired of America. We get fired anyway, Ernie.
That's maybe the best show on television. Are they going to ESPN? Has that been made official yet? Adam Studzinski, do you know, my producer?
I think they've said that the show in some form is going to continue.
It's going
to
continue?
Exist.
Okay,
yes.
Good. All right. Because I'm not kidding. It's not just one of the best sports shows on TV. It's one of the best shows on TV, period. Did you see him allegedly poop his pants on national TV last week?
I did see that, yes.
Did you catch that? That was fun. They're a fun bunch of guys. And we do have some breaking news concerning Shaquille O'Neal. I should get this in. Breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Shaquille O'Neal has agreed to become the men's basketball general manager of Sacramento State. Sources tell ESPN it will be a voluntary role for Shaq, whose son Shaquir O'Neal also plays for Sac State under Mike Bibby. Shaq and Bibby form a star duo as college GM and coach. So Shaq, the GM now of that Sac State basketball program. I'm going to be real with you. This is happening all over the place these days of current or former athletes. Didn't Max Crosby from the Raiders just become the general manager of some university's football program or something? I don't know what a general manager does for a college sports program. Is it the same as what a pro general manager does? What's the difference between the general manager and the athletic director? What exactly is the role and the job of a general manager for a college sports program?
So what I've gathered is this is essentially, yes, like what a major sports GM job would be. So they're kind of taking, like, you know, there's, because of this new world with NIL,
yeah,
you're essentially assembling teams like the pros do. So a lot of schools have decided they need this role where that is a general manager, a step above the coach, basically.
He finds the money, he finds the NIL money, and then goes out and tries to attract people to the program with that money?
I'm assuming that's something to do with it, yes.
Okay.
And I think it's also a way to help take, because there's so much more of this going on, a way to take some stuff off the plate of your head coach, right?
And get
someone else in the room to kind of be in charge of all of that. And, you know, you get a big name like Shaq or, you know, all these other guys that have done it. Like, and isn't Michael Lombardi is the GM for Bill Belichick
over at North Carolina. Bill Belichick, yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of these guys are doing this. So you get a big name like that and, you know, helps attract people.
It's a draw. I like that it's a voluntary position, that he's apparently not getting paid for it, because what does Shaq need another paying job for, quite frankly? The guy, every time I turn on my TV, there's Shaq. He's flipping pizzas for Papa John's. He's with the General. He's on TNT with Ernie and Chuck and Kenny. Every time I turn on my TV, there's Shaq making money somehow. And God bless him. I love the dude. I'm glad he's making money. I heard him say, he was talking about his business interest. Just one more quick thing I found interesting about Shaq and his business interest. He says he divides his business interest equally. Like he has cell phone businesses, that's one, and then he has where he works for other people, and then his third kind of business is just charity, just where he makes money and gives it to, or works for a particular charity to do good in this world. And he says he divides them up equally. He goes out of his way to divide those three things up equally. For every self-employed job that he has, he's working for somebody else and he's doing something for a charity. I think that's, if you can, I think that's a pretty cool way to go about things if you're a Shaquille O'Neal. Hey, speaking of money and people who have a lot of it, Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts was recently asked for a move that would have altered the franchise's trajectory, or a deal that did not happen that he still thinks about. He quickly answered during a sit-down interview with CNBC, as I read from Patrick Mooney's piece at The Athletic. Quote, Ricketts, we spent a lot of time thinking about what Bryce Harper's worth as a free agent. That's one we kicked around that obviously we never executed on. And in a sit-down with Bryce Harper, Mooney got this quote from the Phillies' now first baseman and DH. He says, one of my buddies is a big Cubs fan. He sent it to me like, man, what the heck? Why does he got to say this? But it's one of those things, looking back on it, it could have been really good or it could have been really bad, right? You never know. I never fault any organization for not getting or going after a particular player. He says they were in a much different time frame at that time. You never know what an organization is going to do, where their next 5 years are going to be. You have no idea at the time. It just didn't match or didn't work. It just kind of happens that way sometimes in sports and free agency. And we do have to remember, and Harper pointed it out, it was a very different time and specifically different payroll for the Cubs at that time. The Cubs had the highest payroll in the National League in 2019 when Harper hit free agency. But since then, obviously, their budget has kind of flatlined, and we've seen teams go past them. But at the time of the Harper negotiations, and Mooney lays this out, the Cubs were not even halfway through Jason Hayward's 8-year, $184 million deal. Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, all were looking for their next contracts, and because you didn't have any homegrown pitching, you went and spent all that money on Yu Darvish, which in the first year of his deal, that did not look great. But Harper goes on, fans are going to play with that a little bit, talking about the friendship of him and Chris Bryant, who grew up together in Las Vegas. He said, I think it's fun. Chris is definitely a little bit more reserved than I am with that kind of stuff, but I think it was real. For me, it was definitely real, wanting to possibly come here and play. But again, where the organization was, you had no idea what they were going to do. It was definitely something I talked about, wanting to play in Wrigley, wanting to play in Chicago. One of the better meetings I had was with the White Sox on the other side. It just didn't pan out that way. Obviously, I'm extremely happy with where I am in Philadelphia. I would never change it for the world. I love the fan base, city, everything. It's a blast. But pre-2019, going into free agency, the Cubs were at the top of my list.
Ah.
Yeah. And the article ends with, it's my favorite visiting place to play. Just the vibes of Chicago and Wrigley and the Ivy when the wind's blowing in. It's not great, but it's such a fun ballpark. The crowds show up with the bleacher creatures out there. It was always fun listening to what they had to say behind me in right field. A summer day in Wrigley, man, it's one of the best baseball atmospheres in the league. Dude, that absolutely kills me. That breaks my heart. I still watch the Phillies to this day and watch Bryce Harper and Nick Castellano in the same lineup and go, man, that would be cool to have. Not to mention, now, Chris Bryant has fallen on hard times, both production-wise and with the injury history that he's had during his time with the Cubs and since he went on to Colorado. But that was that, and Schwarber too. Schwarber's over there in Philadelphia too. Those four guys in the lineup was just a dream for me. To have Schwarber, Bryant, Harper, and Castellano all in the same lineup was an absolute dream for me, and would have been a very, very potent lineup. I understood that you weren't going to keep that thing together forever. Rizzo was the more veteran guy on that lineup if you're going to let somebody go. Javi Baez production, especially at the plate, started to really disappear, and I understand letting him go, but to not even talk to him, and like I said, they were spending a lot of money at the time, the most in the National League, but to not even talk to him, to let him come to Chicago and only meet with the White Sox, that to me is just it's inexcusable. Even if you were the highest,
White Sox.
Even if you were the highest paid, had the highest payroll in the National League at the time, you don't even sit down with an MVP candidate who has you quote unquote at the top of his list to go and play. You don't even pick up the phone and call Scott Boras and say, hey, what would it take? We know he loves it here. Would he take a little bit less money to at least have that conversation? We know him and Chris Bryant are close friends. We know he loves playing here. Would he take a little bit less money to come play here? Even if that's the only conversation that you have. But it appears that they didn't approach it at all.
Isn't Harper's dog, didn't he name his dog Wrigley?
His dog's name that was a whole Wrigley thing? I think his wife, if I'm not mistaken, is from the Chicagoland area. I think I remember hearing that back when all that was going on and those rumors were swirling with those two best buds reuniting in Chicago. I know the dog's name was Wrigley. I think his wife is a Chicago or Chicago area native, and that was another thing that was drawing him here. But you don't even have that conversation, man. Like, you had it internally, obviously, according to the quote that I read from Tom Ricketts, who says that's one we kicked around that obviously we never executed on. That gets under my skin, man. That you so, never. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine, man. The Bryce Harper's wife,
Sean, because I was working with Sean Sears all weekend. Sorry about
fine.
That too.
No, that's fine. I'm insulted, but it's fine. Bryce and his wife are actually from the same town.
Oh, okay.
Henderson,
all
Nevada.
Right.
So they're okay. High school sweethearts, kind of like Chris Bryant and his wife.
I'm misremembering that. I could have sworn I heard something about her being from the Chicago area when all that was swirling around. That gets under my skin, man. That you didn't even approach it. You didn't even ask his agent or plan a visit. And just what's the harm and picking up the phone or having a... He was already in Chicago to meet with the White Sox. You could say, hey, swing by. Let's talk. Let's see what we can come up with. Even that... That's crazy to me, and there's only one way that they can make it up to me. Adam, do you want to guess what's the one way they can make it up to me? They can re-sign Kyle Tucker, or they can sign Kyle Tucker to an extension. That would make everything okay and make me forget about the Bryce Harper debacle. They got to sign that guy, man. They absolutely must sign Kyle Tucker to some kind of extension.
Yeah, I don't think you can let that guy walk out. You can't,
especially with what you gave up for him. That dude made the major league roster at 19 years old down there in Houston.
They just go to his people and say, hey, you know, Kyle, what's the number? What's the number, man? Like I know he probably wants to get to free agency and just listen to teams, because that you the more teams bidding on you, the higher the number is going to be. But just be like, hey, Kyle, how much, man? How much? Just tell us the number.
Exactly.
And we'll give you the number.
Didn't they give Andre Dawson a blank check? Isn't that the legendary story that they gave Andre Dawson a blank check and said, fill it out and come play for the Cubs? It's a lot more money now. I think Andre Dawson got like $8 million.
But it's 1987. It's a little different.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a lot more for Kyle Tucker. But just give him the blank check and say, write the number in there. What's it going to take to make you a Cub for the rest of your career? Let's get this done. I need that to happen. Either that or a World Series. Otherwise, you lost that trade. I've said that since day one of the trade, and I maintain that, and I will continue to maintain that until they either win a World Series or he signs a contract extension. You lost that trade if you don't do one of those two things, Jed Hoyer. That's if he's even the president of baseball operations after this year. He's on a contract year as well. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, the Bears' favorite trade partner got a little testy. Got a little testy when asked about his draft. Also, there's just a wild, wild, stupid conversation happening in the social media world we must address, because that's the type of show this is. That's right after this. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Rami McLaugh on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I got stuff to give away. Stuff to give away. Adam Studzinski, my producer on the other side of the glass. I'm sorry, I was talking with Bart Winkler, who will be right here on The Score on Infinity Sports Radio coming up at 10 o'clock. He was talking to me while you were talking to me. Did you say to give these away now or at the end of the show? What are we doing here, Adam?
Let's wait till the end of the show.
Okay, I have things to give away.
They call
that
a tease.
At the end of the show. That's a good tease, Adam Studzinski. You get this radio thing. So I have things to give away. Stay right there. Don't get out of your car. I know. Don't do it. I know you just pulled into the garage. Stay right there. I have things to give away in just a few minutes. Over the weekend, the Bears were busy. They were busy. They were making draft picks, but almost as often as they were making draft picks, they were making trades over the weekend, and a couple of those trades were with the Buffalo Bills. They made a trade with them in the second round and then again in the third round and swapped a whole bunch of picks. Those two teams basically, they swapped drafts, except for the first round, from what I could gather. And in the aftermath of that draft, their general manager, Brandon Bean, he was going on a Monday morning radio show, an Odyssey radio station, as a matter of fact. It was on WGR 550 on the Jeremy and Joe show. And I don't, right now, I'm not allowed to drink coffee. I have some medical testing to do tomorrow, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little testy. I've been a little testy today. I'm a little grumpy and a little grouchy and a little testy. And I don't know.
That's tough, man. That's tough.
It's like I'm gonna have to go 36 hours, Adam. I'm on like hour number 28, if I'm doing the math here right. Tomorrow morning,
you just gotta sleep and a wake up. You got this.
I'm almost there. I'm almost there. But I don't know if Brandon Bean didn't get his morning coffee today before going on the Jeremy and Joe show. But man, he jumped right in with, I don't like what people are saying about our draft.
Listen to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very... How so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about Josh Allen. You guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just scored. Hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, I don't – like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show, and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
That was literally his reaction to "Good morning, coach. Welcome to the show." Like that. I'm not kidding. That was, they didn't even get a chance to ask him a question. They brought him on the show, and that was, and he just went right into that, right into what you just heard there of his pushback on any criticism about their draft. And here's what was said. Here's all that was said. I don't know if he was waiting on hold when this was said, or if he was listening in his car before he came on the radio show, before Bean came on the air. This is according to ESPN. The discussion was about the Bills' lack of movement to address wide receiver, including from one of the hosts, Jeremy White, that, quote, relative to the Bills' peers, they do not invest in the wide receiver position. That, first of all, he didn't even say that to Brandon Bean. He didn't ask Brandon Bean, the Bills general manager, about that approach or that strategy of not investing a lot in the wide receiver position. And unless there is more to it, unless there is something after that quote, Jeremy White, the host of that show, he doesn't even take issue with that approach or that strategy. He's just saying they don't invest a lot in the wide receiver position. And in terms of both money and draft picks, they haven't. Now, as Brandon Bean pointed out, it's worked. They've been able to score points. Josh Allen obviously is able to throw the football down the field. But man, that felt like he had just been sitting around listening to people for 2 days with that criticism that they didn't do something to address the wide receiver position, and just tore into those guys literally as soon as they picked up the phone on him. I've done a lot of interviews, Adam. I know you've been on the other side of the glass for a bunch of interviews. I don't know that I've ever had a guy just jump on and start fighting, like literally before a question was even asked, just jumped on and start fighting and call your takes dumb and say that you're bitching and moaning. That he was feisty, man. I don't know what happened to Brandon Bean that morning, but that was a lot for a guy who hadn't even said good morning to him yet.
Well, you know, maybe it is a coffee thing, and you didn't get a lot of sleep the last week, probably. Maybe a little cranky, heard something you didn't like. You know, what I want to know is the most pressing thing on my mind for Brandon Bean would have been, hey, Brandon, how come you and the Bears, how come nobody wanted to make a pick at 109? Why did you keep shuffling that back and forth?
Yeah, that went, the Bears traded that to the Bills. The Bills traded it back, right?
So here's the full breakdown of that. And shout out to Bill Zimmerman on Twitter who broke this down. The Bears, last year, the Bears traded their 2024 fifth-round pick to the Bills for Ryan Bates. The Bills then traded that pick back to the Bears in exchange for the Bears' 2025 fourth-round pick to select Austin Booker. That fourth-round pick became pick 109 in this draft. The Bills then traded pick 109 back to the Bears when the Bears traded out of number 41. And then the Bears traded that pick back to the Bills when they moved off of 109 and the Bills finally took the pick and picked a defensive tackle.
So they swapped it 3 times?
Yes.
Wow.
Before the Bills finally decided that they would make the pick.
What is it about 109 that
I don't know.
That neither of those teams wants? That's wild. That's like the Bulls trading back for their own first round pick from the Spurs.
Remember they did that at the end of the season?
Yeah. That was a thing.
Just sending it back and forth. Just sending that draft pick back and forth. Hey, real quick, before I give away stuff, and stay right there. I'm about to give away stuff. I don't know. Have you seen the debate raging on Twitter today, Adam? The very stupid debate raging on Twitter today?
I've heard rumblings of it, but I haven't. It hasn't really hit my timeline too much.
Could 100 men take on one gorilla? Could 100 men take on? I don't know why. I don't know how.
I mean, all right, so I think we got to get the specifics. What kind of gorilla? Is this a silverback? Is this like an alpha? You know?
Yeah, we're talking full blown silverback gorilla, like the gorilla that you see on National Geographic. That guy. Yeah,
I think that 100 men could do it. I believe in, like, you get 100 men. Wow, mate, 100 men, that's a lot. You know, if everyone works together, I think you can get it done. Now, getting 100 hands, or I guess 200 hands, on the gorilla is going to be tough. He's going to be throwing people around a lot. So
yeah.
I like to think that man could push through on this one, but I don't know if I would make the bet. Yeah, I would need to see the odds.
Gorilla versus the field. You're taking the field, huh?
I might lean field. It depends on what kind of odds I can get. If I'm getting plus money on men, then I'm going to take the plus money.
I'm going gorilla. I'm going gorilla every time on the money line. Hey, right now, the 6th, 7th, and 8th caller to 312-540-0670 can win your way in to see Mully and Haw do their show live Friday, May 16th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be part of a studio audience as they get you set for the start of the Crosstown Series with special guests, plenty of Cubs Sox chatter, plus popcorn will be provided by Nuts and Clark. That's Friday, May 16th. It's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through it all, callers 6, 7, and 8 to 312-540-0670 going to see Mully and Haw live. My thanks to Chris Doering of the SEC Network, Megan Montemurro, who covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune, and to Adam Studzinski on the other side of the glass, and of course to you for listening and contributing to this fine program. I'm Rami Makhlouf saying till next time, thanks for listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Can I finish? Okay, I'm finished.